Before we kick off this episode, we are looking for your help. You can help nominate the Seahawkers podcast for the 15th annual People's Choice Podcast Awards by going to podcastawards.com. Click the text that says, click me to nominate my favorite podcasts and select the Seahawkers podcast in the sports category. That's up at podcastawards.com. And you have until the end of July. You know, Adam, we want to compete with some of the top podcasts this year. So we really need our listeners' help.
Yeah, I'd really like to go for this and see if we can't make that turn and, you know, really just bring this all together. I do enjoy this because what is this? Maybe if we happen to make the finals this year, it'd be what, like the fifth year in a row, something like that?
No, see, we missed last year.
No, we didn't. We made it. I don't care what anybody said. If we didn't make it last year, that's fake news.
Okay? We fell short last year. That's why I feel like we need this renewed emphasis to really get out the vote this year.
All right. Very good.
Nominate us because the Packers fan podcast got in last year and we didn't.
And they know they don't deserve to be there.
No. So I feel like it's more on us for maybe not pushing it as hard last year. We maybe took it for granted that people would just go and nominate us.
So, yeah, we need to make sure that the Packers podcast is dumped from the finalist list, much like Danica Patrick was dumped the other day by Aaron Rodgers.
Exactly. Welcome to episode 299 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Maybe for the last time. I think I'm going to hang him up before we make it to 300. I think I'm over it.
Cut it short. We don't need all of that stress of trying to hit 300 episodes. We'll call it right now.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to be the Barry Sanders of podcasts. You know, like he retired right before he got the NFL rushing record. It was right there. And then he allowed Emmitt Smith to take it by just being an average back behind an amazing offensive line for a long time. So
that's how much you appreciate Emmitt Smith, is that you're willing to Barry Sanders this podcast so somebody else can go and take a title.
So some very average podcaster that just does this longer can have that title. Yeah,
it's an interesting strategy based on your philosophy. And I will see you next episode.
I just wanted me and Barry Sanders to collide in the same sentence. That's all. That's it.
There you go. You did it. Well done. Congratulations.
All right, fine. I'll be back for 300.
We'll see you next episode.
Okay.
Well, going into this 2020 season, though, Adam, there are some things that we're going to miss. And we're going to get into the Cardinals in this episode. It's the Know Your Rival series. We're breaking down each NFC West opponent. Mm-hmm. But we got some bad news here in these past 2 weeks. And, well, maybe bad news for some, maybe not really bad news at all for others, because there's been this push to cancel preseason games for a long time. And I didn't realize how many people really enjoyed the preseason until the announcement came out that preseason games were going away.
Right. And I think mainly the only reason people really enjoy the preseason games is they're just wanting football sooner. Is really the only reason, because the football is atrocious. You really can't glean a lot. Although you usually get that one preseason guy that at the end of the roster you fall in love with that gets cut, Tremaine Pope. And you get that little heartbreak and that sort of thing. But no, I'm not sad to see the preseason go. I don't need to see any extra chance for injury and or infection. I really, really need ball in my life. Like, I need it to happen this NFL regular season. So anything that can possibly be done to make sure that we at least get 1 or 2 weeks of it at the bare minimum, I'm for it. And so no preseason, fine by me.
1 or 2 weeks. Very optimistic, hopeful. Hopefulness on your part there.
Hey, I'm saying, like, again, it's about managing expectations, Brandon. Like, if you keep them real low, then everything else is a win.
You know what? I think that's a philosophy that a lot more people are adopting these days.
Yeah. 2020 is just bringing everybody down to my level. You're managing expectations. Everybody's moving off the grid. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's thinking my way now.
I did hear that a lot of people are moving into smaller towns. Like, they're not even bothering to. You know, there's houses in our neighborhood that are just up on the market and then gone because people from out of town are deciding that moving into areas where there's fewer people is a good idea.
Yes, I'm very much hoping that exact situation unfolds for me here in about the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yes.
Going to put my place up in Missoula for sale. Hopefully it sells pretty much immediately. And then it's to the wilderness, man.
Because you're moving to where there's no people. Some people are just settling for fewer people, and you're going all out, no people, except, you know, maybe your 5 acres space between you and the next home.
Right. I have one neighbor. His name is also Brandon, and that's it.
You can't get away from me.
No.
At least my name.
I got Brandon's all over my life. Yeah.
Well, leading up to the season ticket holders were offered an opt-out to the 2020 season for Seahawks. So it's going to be interesting how they handle ticketing. They're going to spread people out in the stadium, it sounds like, as season ticket holders will just have a chance to buy up tickets that are, I think, are spaced out. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work out, but it's going to be different.
I have very mixed feelings about this, because in one way, that would be the ideal way for me to attend a game, is like having my own section, basically, right?
Right.
And nobody right next to me. I like that aspect of it, that speaks to me. But also, too, there's the other half of me that thinks this is the dumbest idea in the world. Why are we inviting the risk that comes with bringing even 10,000 people to the stadium? Why are we running the risk that might end up shutting ball down? Like, just no more, just no fans. We're just not, just don't come. It's okay. It's fine. It will be okay. The players have already said they don't give a crap.
They just want to play.
Let's just not have the risk. I don't understand why we're doing it at all. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I can see it both ways. I could see you wanting it's a hard thing, because football feels like football when fans are there cheering. You don't have to do any of the nonsense of trying to do artificial noise or anything. And if you're going to space people out in a safe way, if there's a way to do it safely, then sure.
I just want ball. I need football.
Yes, number one goal.
I could give a crap if people that are butthurt that they can't go to the stadium throw a fit. I can't care less. Sorry, just make sure we get football. That's it.
That's been the consistent theme of the offseason. Let's get to the season. Let's watch football.
So with my do better for this week, I'm actually going to be talking about another step that has been taken to maybe try to ensure this season, and what one of our players maybe had to say about it, and the way the media maybe framed what he said, or allegedly said, I guess. But it's interesting, man. I just want us to take every precaution and do everything we can.
It sounds like they are implementing just a ton of different precautions, trying to space people out at the facilities. You know, they're doing testing for individual players or daily for 2 weeks leading up through the preseason. Mm-hmm. Rookies reported to minicamp here this week, and the first couple days, all they're going in is for tests. So here we are at the end of July, and a lot of these rookies are visiting the VMAC for the first time this offseason.
Yeah, that is really crazy. I mean, this entire offseason is going to be completely different, and that definitely presents some challenges for the Seahawks going forward. I mean, talk about the offensive line and lack of continuity and all the guys you're trying to kind of sort through and decide who is your actual starting five, and then having them have time to mesh together. And that just right there is interesting. You brought up an excellent point on the phone yesterday when we were talking with the vid and all that. Like, hey, what happens if your whole O-line comes down with the vid? Now what do you do?
And what do you do? Not only what do you do in terms of filling in behind him, you will have backup players, but putting five backup players in front of Russell Wilson does not fill me with a ton of confidence. I know he can be elusive, but we've seen bad offensive lines in the past and a bunch of dudes that really haven't worked together at all. Gosh, when you're just talking about that, it made me think of the right guard situation. And yeah, there's a lot of dudes who could fill in at right guard, but not anybody who has had experience with the starting five. It makes me miss DJ Fluker.
Yep, I miss Fluke. I lamented the day that he was let go, man. I said, you know what? I'll be okay with it if they actually go out and pick up one of these pass rushers. And well, that hasn't happened either. So that's neat. It's an interesting time for the Seahawks, no doubt about it. And I don't think they had planned on having this little time to try to put together their team. I don't know what to expect. And like you said, putting Russ behind maybe a makeshift offensive line with no preparation, right? That makes me afraid that we're going to see Russell Wilson's backup, because we usually see him when the offensive line is worse than dumpster fire. which we've seen a few times. We've seen backup or injured Russell Wilson.
Yeah, injured Russell Wilson is the Seahawks backup quarterback. I would prefer to see third string quarterback Geno Smith in if we were to get to that kind of situation. Wait out 2 weeks until the offensive line is back and healthy again. And it's a scenario that I just hope we don't have to see.
This might waste a year of Russell Wilson's peak prime. That pisses me off to no end. It's like we finally get that elite guy, right? The one that everybody's saying the only do better right now is the Mahomes, according to pretty much everybody, right?
Uh-huh.
We finally have him. And we finally get through his first few years, like, and now he's at that point where he really can just take over, right? And just take over games and the whole let Russ cook thing and all that. And it's here, except for, no, there's a boogeyman bug out there that has shut everything down. Like, what are the freaking odds?
You would almost prefer to be a team like the Jaguars or, yeah, one of the bad teams.
Yeah, if this had happened during the Moore year, you know, like a forgettable year altogether for us, like that would have been fine. Like I didn't need to watch that team that year. I didn't need that in my life.
It could work out just as well in the idea that you're having a 7-team playoff now. That was one of the things that was approved this offseason. So it makes it that much easier to get into the playoffs. No matter how many games are played, I would count on the Seahawks being able to at least get into that group within the NFC. And then once you get to the playoffs, depending on the situation with crowds, then it may not even matter going on the road like it has in the past.
True.
So that could make it that much easier for Seattle to, you know, romp through some teams that really rely on their home crowd noise in the playoffs and that energy to get them up early against the team. And, you know, we know the Seahawks, they're not a team that really gets up early against other teams. It could end up working out to their benefit somehow. Maybe we look back and we say, hey, this worked out well.
Hey, I don't enjoy this turn to optimism here all of a sudden. No, but I mean, those are all good points. Yeah, I guess we'll end up seeing. I mean, another thing to, you know, bring us back to a pessimistic more point of view, which I feel like is a healthier place to be. We have a lot of questions at corner, and it's looking like one of their big offseason moves is not going to pan out.
You know what? I want to bring some optimism to this conversation, but we'll do that after we get to the Cardinals. Let's go back to the...
Oh, okay. You ought to say, I thought we were getting all the Seahawks news out.
No, I want to spend some time with Quentin Dunbar and what has happened. And I think coming up after the break, after we talk Cardinals, is the best time to do it.
So we can continue to be pessimistic, but in a wholly different way, we can be pessimistic about one of these craptastic divisional rivals that we have to deal with. And just talk about the trash that is the Arizona Cardinals, right?
Well, do you want to stick on the pessimism with the Seahawks and talk about these PFF rankings for our number 32 ranked defensive line by Pro Football Focus?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know that they're wrong. So there's that.
It's been a pretty common response, I think, from a lot of Seahawks fans. They see that and go, yeah, Clowney's still not on the roster. It's hard. And the big signings were Benson Mayoa and Bruce Irvin. And Bruce Irvin's listed as a linebacker, so PFF may not even be counting him as part of the defensive line. It's really hard to look at that and say, yeah, they're wrong. But
well, if you kind of look at the league in tiers, right? And you look at that last bottom five teams, right? In terms of defensive line play. I think we could all admit that the Seahawks are in that area. So however you want to rank them, fine. But yeah.
One of the ones that I have a hard time with is with the Las Vegas Raiders being number 28.
Yeah, they've got some young guys.
They've got some young guys, but there aren't any dudes that are like big name guys.
No.
Maurice Hurst.
Yeah, but you're like saying 28 to too high. Like, they could only fall five spots down.
I would take our defensive line, I think, over the Raiders.
Again, rank those bottom five however you would like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Raiders, Panthers, Dolphins, Jets.
Yeah. Yep.
Seattle.
There you go.
It's not much better when you move up the list either. Detroit Lions, New York Giants, Patriots. Yeah, Patriots really don't have a whole lot of dudes.
No, they tend to cycle through guys, but they always seem to find them too. So there's that.
got the number one ranked linebacker core.
Well, duh. I mean, just Bobby, and then you throw KJ in there, and then whoever else, it doesn't much matter now, does it?
Sure. Yeah, Jordan Brooks, yeah. Bruce Irvin.
Yeah.
The thing that's really bugging me about the defensive line is the defensive tackle depth.
Yeah.
You got Jaron Reed and Puna Ford, so you got your two starters.
Yeah.
And then you have a dude who played primarily on the practice squad last year with Brian Monet, another guy, DeMarcus Christmas, who was drafted last year, didn't play anywhere, anytime.
Big question mark.
And then you have two other dudes who I've never even heard of, Josh Avery and Cedric Lattimore.
Yeah. So don't know one thing about them. I didn't even know they existed in this world until you just brought up their names right there. But I mean, ideally at D tackle, you're going to want about 4 to 5 guys that you feel pretty confident about. Now, maybe they view Rasheem Green as somebody that can, you know, come inside on third down situations and more in that kind of NASCAR package sort of thing.
Yeah, Collier, maybe one of those guys.
Collier too. As well. So maybe they look at some of those pieces as being, or even the kid from Syracuse that they drafted this year late. I mean, another guy that can kind of play both interior and outside. And maybe they kind of view it more in that light. And they're just looking at some of those lighter weight guys as being in a more passing league, that maybe you play them on the interior more than you would have in the past.
It almost feels more like a 3-4 style defensive line, what they're going to, than an actual 4-3 of what they've traditionally played.
4-3 under. Yeah. Well, let's hope they make some adjustments and do something a little different on defense, because it was not trending in the right direction last year.
No, they clearly see, this is a place where you can't be optimistic. There's nowhere to go but up.
There you go. See, lower the expectations and then everything else is a win.
You are at the bottom.
Yeah.
Only get better.
Yeah.
Or you can be that much worse.
That's why I fear success, because I can only go down.
Well, the other Seahawks news from this past week, a guy who could have actually been an improvement on the defensive line retired, Michael Bennett, retiring after 11 seasons.
Yeah, I think it's probably about time, right? I mean, he would, towards the end of his career, not nearly as productive as he had been in the past, but hey, man, an amazing career. I loved having Mike B on the team. One of the best personalities in all of football, right? I mean, just enjoyable guy. I wish him nothing but happiness in retirement, man. And thanks for everything that he did for the Seahawks.
A guy who will be remembered just for everything that he did through the team, coming in 2013, being one of those big free agent signings that really helped the team make it over the hump from 2012 to the Super Bowl 2013 season. A guy who was such a big focus for the Patriots in the Super Bowl the following year that, you know, once Cliff Averill was out, that all they could just focus all their attention on Michael Bennett in that Super Bowl. And maybe his time with the Seahawks toward the end didn't end necessarily as well as it could have. But he's a guy that for those seasons, it was a good time in Seattle.
Heck yeah, man. It was a great run. And it didn't end like particularly well, but it didn't end that badly either.
I mean, getting a 5th round pick for a guy who had been one of the top pass rushers in the league isn't exactly what you'd hope for.
No, that feels like a Bill O'Brien type trade at that point.
Bill O'Brien, one of the worst moves of the offseason to the Arizona Cardinals, helping what has really made the Arizona Cardinals probably the team of the offseason. If I can pick one team that won the offseason, it is the 2020 Arizona Cardinals.
All right, so we're ready to talk cards now.
I think so.
Okay, I'm allowed?
I just wanted to get through one thing.
Well, you are 100% correct when you talk about the one darling hyped team going into an offseason. There's always that one. And by God, it's the Arizona Cardinals this year. And by God, I can't understand why for the life of me.
You can't understand why they are the winners of the offseason?
They made one trade. And granted, great trade in terms of value. Yeah. But one star receiver does not make a team an instant playoff contender. Cleveland Browns.
Odell Beckham Jr., the acquisition, which really did get the Browns that title. But the other thing that got the Browns the title was having a quarterback going into his second year
An Oklahoma quarterback picked number one going into his second year, who had a tremendously overhyped rookie year.
There's some parallels.
There's some similarities here. No doubt about it.
There were some other things that the Arizona Cardinals did to improve this offseason. They had the eighth overall pick. Isaiah Simmons from Clemson fell to him at eighth overall.
Mm-hmm. And where does he play?
What position?
Yeah.
I think they have him listed as linebacker.
Oh, so they decided on one?
I think they did. They had to pick a spot for him to be listed at.
I understand that his athleticism pops off the screen, and that's really cool. And we'll see what he does. I mean, I'm not making a steadfast prediction here, but oftentimes those guys who are just tremendous athletes on good teams in college football, but don't really have a position that they dominate at, they almost never translate in the NFL.
I think he could be a Jamal Adams type player.
At linebacker, though? Instead of safety?
He can play, just seeing him in college, he's a guy who played outside at corner. He played at safety. He got up on the defensive line and rushed the passer at times. So I feel like linebacker is just the spot where you say, okay, this is, you know, the position that we're going to tie him to. As far as, I don't know, number selection. You see the NFL doing this on defense with all other kinds of teams, that they're going more to those college-style defenses where they have guys who are just versatile dudes.
Yeah, I guess.
Tyrann Mathieu, one of those guys that was with Arizona that was a similarly versatile type of player.
Yeah. I just find it interesting that, you know, kind of the big upgrade short of Hopkins, right, for this team, is some positionless rookie that we really don't know who he is. And that's where everybody goes, oh my gosh, they got better this year.
Sure.
I'm dead serious. That's the move.
Yeah, they got better at different positions. You know, they got Jordan Phillips from the Bills to help out with their defensive interior. They got Devon Kennard out of Detroit to help with the pass rush. They got
mediocre players.
Devondre Campbell from Atlanta at linebacker. So
I didn't even know he existed. Yeah. No, I mean, all these guys are kind of just guys.
Sure. They kept Kenyon Drake.
Sure.
They got rid of David Johnson.
That might be addition by subtraction, but they had already kind of subtracted him out of the offense anyways. They're trash offense. I can't wait to talk about that. But I do find it interesting. This does have the feeling of the Browns from the year before, because you add some skill position guys and let's add Drake in as like that guy that everybody's looking at, be like, oh, well, they traded for him late in the year and he's a big deal. Like, you look at all these skill players, right? And your offensive line is still a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And that is not going to translate well come the actual regular season. It never does. Everybody stops focusing on the trenches in the offseason and they kind of almost get in like fantasy football numbers in their mindset. And it just doesn't make any sense. Like, yes, D-Hop is a great, great receiver. No doubt about it. But he's going to get real sick and tired of running 5-yard outs and bubble screens.
The good thing with the Cardinals, though, is you do have a quarterback who can be elusive with Kyler Murray. So as he's kind of growing into this role, you were drawing the parallels between him and Baker Mayfield.
He's better than Baker.
He can run faster than Baker.
Yeah. See, that was my biggest critique of Baker coming out, was that he ran the scribble play a lot in college, right? And he was just athletic enough to get away with that. And that was never going to translate in the NFL. And as we can see, it really isn't. And then you saw Kyler and you're like, wow, that guy has elite quicks, right? He's not top end fast, really. I mean, he's got top end speed, but he's not Lamar in that way, right? But his short area quickness is really, his sack is off the charts. I mean, he's got good sack. And that is something that sets him apart. I'm going to trash the Cardinals offense here for a couple minutes as we get into this. It's not so much trashing Kyler Murray. Like, keep that in mind. I think Kyler Murray's an okay NFL quarterback, and I think that's what he's going to be. He's a system guy. He's a system guy in college, and he put up some, quote, numbers in the air raid offense that is a giant and complete gimmick.
Cliff Kingsbury, going into his second year with coaching this team, he's come along with a lot of hype for a guy who again, didn't accomplish much in college. I am really curious to see where he goes with this offense.
Great hair, though. Great hair.
You know, he is overrated in terms of good looks in the division coaches. Everybody talks about, NFC West has the best looking coaches with Sean McVay and Shanahan. And
Shanahan's not good looking. I think I would do it if I were going to power rank good looking coaches in the NFC West in handsomeness. I think I go Pete first. Like, there is like an aura about Pete and the silver foxiness of him and all that. Like, then I go McVay, and then I'd probably go Kingsbury after that. And then Shanahan has that weird, like his eyes are too close together. And like, you know, maybe there's too much inbreeding with cousins, things like that. Right. Like, that's what that kind of allegedly looks like. That might not be true. Don't look it
his
up.
His dad's
a book,
Mike. But, so that's all you have to say is.
Yeah. And he was a Broncos coach, and I hate the Broncos. So like, I got to trash Kyle as well. Yeah.
You know, the top two and the bottom two, I feel like should be consistent for everybody. And it should just vary depending on your taste. Sean McVay, Pete Carroll, depending on your youthfulness, you might lean toward Pete Carroll being a little bit too old, but he deserves to be in the top two.
So it's much like the PFF power rankings for defensive lines, it's like tiers. That bottom five. Just, however you want to rank those is fine. But yeah, we know the tiers. We can all agree on the tiers.
But there's, and maybe the difference is in the NFC West, there's no ugly coaches. Like, they have a level of handsomeness that's beyond of some of those other divisions.
Sure.
I don't know how we got onto this and away from the actual. I think I was just mentioning the fact that Kingsbury was going into a second year of his coach. And yes, you think of Kingsbury and you think of the wonky eye that he has. And so then you start looking. It leads you down into looks. And that's, I guess that's how we got here.
Exactly. So I'm curious, what do you think about the air raid Kingsbury offense and how revolutionary it is?
As someone who hasn't watched a lot of college football, air raid is, and by the name of it, you think of it being just this relentless passing attack where you're going downfield. And in terms of being, you know, revolutionary type style to the NFL, I think, you know, the Bills in the 90s and running the no huddle offense was more impressive than what we saw from.
Okay. They have a similarity in the sense of, I would say quantity of passes and in tempo. But nothing else.
Yeah.
The air raid, very different than the K-gun. Like, those are very, very different offenses.
So how is this different from what Chip Kelly was doing with the Eagles and 49ers?
Ding! I'm glad you brought that up, Brandon, because that is an excellent, excellent point. It's the same college bullshit. They just spread you out. It's one read garbage. It's a bunch of screens. And that's it. I mean, it really is. Terrible offense. You look at, if you actually kind of dig into Kyler's numbers from last year, he compares closest to Case Keenum in many regards. A guy who only started for about 6-7 games, right? Completion percentage, passer rating, touchdown to interception ratio, all that stuff. Basically, Kyler played at a Case Keenum level last year, but, and then ran a little bit. All right. And so I was like, all right, let's see why everybody is so hyped about Kyler Murray and what an amazing player that he is. So went back and I looked at a few games and I was like, I'm going to watch every throw of Kyler Murray from 3-4 games. And so I turned it on, checked it out. Dink and dunk, bubble screens, slants and 5-yard outs, and an occasional shot up the sideline. That's it. That's their whole offense. This is going to be figured out by year 3. They may have a little success with it this year. But by year 3, you'll be seeing Cliff Kingsbury making Sean McVay faces like he makes now when everybody exposes the hell out of what you do. It's not far behind. The only difference is that Kyler can run around a little bit and save the offense, right? Where Goff can't do that.
Right.
But it's the same gimmicky offense BS.
I'm looking at the next gen stats for Kyler Murray.
Okay. And there's one that's important there.
Well, I am curious to hear it because one of the things I expected to see when looking at it was just not a lot of throws over the middle, with the height being an issue that we know with Russell Wilson. He doesn't attack the middle of the field, and maybe that's just a style choice. Mm-hmm. But I was expecting to see not a lot of throws short and over the middle, but he actually has quite a few.
Yeah, he does. Throwing over the middle is not a problem. Like, I'm not going to kill Kyler for a few different things. Number one is height. I'm not going to kill him about his height. He plays just fine. All right. Also, I'm not going to kill him for being a running quarterback. You know, we talk a lot about Lamar and we worry if that's sustainable, right? But that's because he takes some shots, man. He puts his body in harm's way. Kyler is super smart running the football. He is much like Russ, where he rarely gets touched. So I don't fear him getting hurt the way that I do say maybe Lamar, even though they are both running quarterbacks, okay? Or quarterbacks who can run. Now, the thing about Kyler is, look at how many yards per attempt the ball travels through the air. I think they listed on the Next Gen Stats as IAY. The average attempt, the air yards, he is 32nd in the league.
Wow.
That's how he got all those stupid completions on. And then I went back and looked at
is that a function of the air raid offense, though? Aren't you looking in? I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is probably a guy who's in the bottom few guys, too.
Yeah, I think he's actually two slots below Kyler. That's why I said I'm not going to kill Kyler too much here. This is more the offense, a critique of their offense. But this is also something I saw in college from him. The long throws that he made were dudes who were wide open that Lincoln Riley had schemed open. Right?
Right.
I don't see him as a tremendous deep passer. It's just not the strength of his game. So, number one, he doesn't throw the ball downfield. Number two, that is a direct function of that air raid offense. And I went back and I listened to some of these guys doing breakdowns of Kyler Murray's amazing year, right? Because I heard Chris Sims gush about him. Brian Baldinger gush about him. A couple other guys on YouTube who do breakdowns gush about him, right? And some of these clips that they would pull up, I swear to God, this is the type of stuff they were gushing about, Brandon. It would be four wide. They would do play action out of the shotgun, and a Kyler would just turn and throw to, say, like Fitz.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, they do the thing where they throw, show the play, and Kyler would throw it, you know, 8 yards on a quick out. And they'd be like, look at this, look at this. And they'd rewind it. And they're like, look at this, it's right there. It's right in front of him. Yeah, it's a freaking quick out. Whoop-de-doo. And they gush over it like he just threw into a tight window over the middle, split two defenders, and made an amazing throw that nobody else can make. People see what they want to see. And with Kyler in this offense, I'm telling you, man, the league is going to shut this crap down right quick.
Completed air yards per pass attempt, 3.5. And that puts him, wow, that actually puts him right with Aaron Rodgers toward the bottom. I didn't realize A-Rod was in this similar type of situation.
There's also some names down towards that bottom of the list that you associate with greatness, but are also very old. And so it makes some sense.
Oh, like Tom Brady?
Drew Brees.
He's outside of the top 10. This one is a little bit different, I think, than the other one that you were looking at was intended air yards per pass attempt, which it measures it whether it's been completed or not. So this,
right.
This one takes into account completions, and he is just
only completions. So only, for every completion, he was near the bottom as well. Yeah. For every attempt, he was almost dead nuts last.
Right. Yeah, you do see him down there with names, you know, just ahead of him, Andy Dalton and Tom Brady, but and just ahead of them, Kirk Cousins and Jared Goff. So, yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo is at 31, Drew Brees at 32.
Can't wait to talk about him next week, man.
Yeah. Joe Flacco at 29.
Yeah.
But yeah, this isn't necessarily a good judge of quarterbacks who are good versus not good.
No,
but it is. But it gives you an idea of the type of offense that these teams are running.
Yeah, it's a stat that lines up with the eyeball test when you actually watch their game tape.
Although you look at all the quarterbacks, aside from Aaron Rodgers, that are 3.5 or below in the completed air yards per attempt.
Yeah,
it's Sam Darnold, Daniel Jones, Andy Dalton, Kyler Murray, Joe Flacco, Kyle Allen, Mitch Trubisky, Jacoby Brissett, Mason Rudolph.
Yeah. I think
apart from Aaron Rodgers, none of those players are guys that I get too excited about.
I think in intended air yards per attempt, right? The air yards per attempt. I think he's right behind Duck Hodges.
Wow.
I mean, it just gives you a sense.
Top five for completed air yards per pass attempt. Matthew Stafford, Jameis Winston, Ryan Tannehill, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson.
Names you would think of.
Number six. Matt Ryan.
Who?
Yes.
Is that that guy from where? One of those cities. It's in the South, yeah?
Yeah, one of those. I think Seattle may see him week one.
Huh. Well, I'll look him up when the week one comes around, I guess.
If Seattle had to push back, if the entire NFL had to push back the start of the season, would you rather just cut off the week one game against the Falcons and go straight to week two, or do you just push the whole season back?
I hate that franchise. I'm not a fan of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I don't like buttholes that you play in, like their stadium. And I'm just not a fan overall. The color scheme's ugly. Everything about them is ugly.
We're really going against the Bird Team Brotherhood in this episode.
There is no Bird Team Brotherhood. It's every bird for himself. Go Hawks.
Back to the Cardinals.
Boo.
Kenyon Drake did have some success in this offense, though, behind a relatively not good offensive line.
The one thing that I would point to, as far as the Cardinals maybe having some success, I expect Hopkins to put up some numbers because he just will. Mm-hmm. They'll target the hell out of him. I mean, Fitz is still a good possession receiver. But what could make their offense special in where it could kind of be unlocked and have maybe that one great year like the Rams did where they actually put it together for a year for just like a split second would be if either Isabella or Kirk really step up and turn into like a legit weapon.
Yeah, I'm not so sold on Isabella, but in terms of their three receiving targets being Hopkins, Fitt, and Christian Kirk.
Yeah,
I think that would maybe rank for me as the top three guys in the division.
Top three receivers?
Well, it would give the Cardinals the top trio
wide
of receivers.
Core? The trio?
Yeah. I mean, and then you have Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and I don't know, David Moore. I guess throw him in there as three.
Dorsett.
Or
Josh Gordon.
who's not on the team yet.
Might be. And not Antonio
Brown. If Seattle gets Antonio Brown, they will have the top trio in maybe all the league.
He retired again.
No, he unretired again.
Already?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh my God. This is why we do not need the hoopla of AB.
It was questionable whether he actually retired when he was just on Twitter being, I think, kind of pouty. And you know how you get emotional on Twitter. You say things.
I don't know that.
And
a lot
of people took it as a retirement.
I think he's, yeah, well.
He came out just in the past day or so to say that he wants the NFL to wrap up the investigation against him so he can play again.
You know, I just hope that he finds one of the voices to listen to in his head and sticks with the one.
Just go with the one.
Yeah, I think it'd be better for his deal.
I wish him well.
Yes, as a human being, I hope he gets it figured out, man.
Yeah.
It worries me. But what doesn't worry me is virtually everything about the Cardinals defense.
The Cardinals defense. With free agency, they improved somewhat, but they had a bad defense last year.
Where did they improve in free agency?
They have a couple guys who can fill in on the defensive line a little better. They have guys on the defensive line. Their pass rush could be good.
Are you referencing Chandler Jones, the new Eric Weddle of the NFL, the most overrated quote star player in the league?
Yeah.
I saw the phrase written in one of these Cardinals articles here that I was looking at the last couple of days, and Chandler Jones was as dominant as ever. I don't know what league they watch. To have written that.
He produces.
Where? When? Have you ever seen it actually happen? These are alleged sacks in my mind.
At the end of the season, you look at Chandler Jones' numbers, and he is among the top five of the sack leaders in the NFL.
He's been on the Cardinals for how long now? Three seasons?
Sure.
Have you ever felt Chandler Jones's presence when we've played them?
I feel like when we play the Cardinals, I'm worried about so many other things.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other crap that goes sideways. There's no doubt about it. I'd be the first to say that. But when it comes to Chandler Jones, have you ever felt him wreck a game against the Seahawks? Ever? Or even come close to it?
there isn't a game that really jumps out at me as one where
there
he just demolished the Seahawks.
He's a compiler, man. That's all he is. And Patrick Peterson is 96 years old. He's their only good corner. The only piece on their defense I like is Buda Baker. That's it.
That's a guy who could have been a Seahawk.
I know. I think we both were hoping for that, actually.
Chandler Jones has been with the Cardinals for 4 seasons.
Okay. Yeah. And again, so that's what, 8 games?
Do you know?
0 impressions. 8 games, 0 impressions.
Well, he did have 4 sacks in that game against us last year.
I don't recall that game anymore. I've wiped that from my head.
I know. That was a terrible game.
Yeah. I guess there were so many other things going wrong that, like, I just...
Yeah,
just
like not having Dwayne Brown.
Yeah, so we feasted on a guy that used to play basketball in the 8th grade.
Yeah.
Good job, Chandler Jones.
In every game that he has played against the Seahawks, except for one, he has recorded 1 sack, at least.
Neat. I don't know. They never seem to be those big game-changing plays. They just don't.
Maybe.
I think of Bosa, right? And like, he's so much more disruptive. Clowney, more disruptive. Freaking, like, I would love to sit here and tell you that Aaron Donald is trash and he's not really as good as everybody says he is, but he's every bit as good as they say he is. He destroys us every time. Like, you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. When you think of a guy like Aaron Donald or Nick Bosa or, you know, DeForest Buckner, and thank goodness he's not with the 49ers anymore.
Those are guys. That's an interesting move.
I feel like that you legit worry about.
Yes. And I sincerely do not worry about Chandler Jones. He's not even a guy. I forget his name sometimes.
That's funny you say that. I do too.
I know.
I get him confused with the other dude who was on the Patriots before he left New England.
Not Flowers.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
Boy, it's been a long offseason, man.
For you, Chandler Jones falls into the Matt Ryan territory.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Without question.
A guy who's probably going to make the Hall of Fame based on stats. And you don't want to recognize the fact that that's possible.
Look, if you want to put Matt Ryan in the Hall of Fame because he won 1 MVP, that's fantastic. But it's a slap in the face to everybody else who ever played quarterback that's in the Hall of Fame.
Ouch.
Yep.
So now I'm curious. I'm going back to the PFF list of defensive line rankings. Mm-hmm. They do start. The very first sentence is Chandler Jones is the star player on the Cardinals defensive front. But I think they touch on something that you're recognizing here is that they say he has managed to consistently generate more sacks than his pressure total should generate, something that is typically not a skill. So he's ending up getting more sacks, even though he's not generating as much pressure as some of the high pressure guys, you know, kind of the opposite of Jadeveon Clowney, who is a high pressure guy, but gets very few sacks.
Exactly. They're almost polar opposites, right?
Yeah. And then they have Jordan Phillips on their defensive line who had 10 sacks last year. They say he might be confused for a legitimate pass rush presence. The sacks represented 10 of 26 total pressures.
Exactly.
A guy who had 26 total pressures and still got 10 sacks.
Yeah. Sometimes numbers do lie, right?
Yeah. They have the 18th ranked defensive line in the NFL.
Okay.
So that shows you, even having the number 32, that's not a whole lot of difference.
No, it certainly isn't. And yeah, and you combine it with that offense that, look, man, we've watched a couple of these guys bust out their little gimmicky college offense, right? And it lasts for a year or two. I mean, Nagy was the last guy. The Bears have that one great year. And everybody, oh boy, look at Nagy and what he's doing up there in Chicago and all that. Oh, geez, that Chicago offense, it's great. And then a year later, everybody's like, oh yeah, this is absolute garbage.
And the Cardinals don't have the defense that can carry a team like the Bears have a defense that can carry their team.
No, I just don't see this as going. They won 5 games last year. They were 5-11. Yeah.
6-10.
I don't think they won that many games.
You know why we couldn't think of it? It's because they had a tie. They were 5-10-1.
Oh, there we go. So that's pretty close. It was hilarious listening to Brian Baldinger's breakdown of Kyler Murray. He's like, and then they started stacking wins. And I'm like, what, all 5 of them? over the course of 16 games.
Yeah, they at the end of the season, they beat the Browns in Arizona, 38-24. And then they beat a wounded Seattle team.
Yeah, decimated, I think, is a better word. And then they beat the Falcons somewhere in there, which might they might have been the worst team in the league there for a hot minute.
Okay, well, the stretch where they compiled wins was when they went on the road to Cincinnati. Then they beat the Falcons at home.
The team with the number one pick in the draft. Okay.
Yeah, Cincinnati, Falcons, and then at the New York Giants. That was their three-game winning streak.
Yeah.
And they won those games by a combined 10 points.
Exactly, man. Look, I don't see how this team got better for the most part. I mean, Hopkins obviously is going to be an upgrade at the receiver position, but a receiver only does so much to upgrade your offense when you don't have an offensive line.
One of my favorite stats in the NFL, though, comes courtesy of a receiver on the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, yeah?
Larry Fitzgerald has more career tackles with 40 than he has drops, 29.
That's pretty outstanding.
That's a cool stat.
That's a cool stat. Look, and that's he's a guy we say year in and year out. I can't rip on Fitz. There's nothing about him that I
can't rip on Fitz. You can't rip on Aaron Donald. You can't rip on Richard Sherman.
No. Like to. Can't do it. They're too good. And especially in Fitz's case, even better dudes off the field.
I know.
Yeah. So I can't say. And I know Sherm is that way. I don't know much about Aaron Donald off the field, but
I feel like we would have heard that.
Yeah, he does not seem to be that guy.
Yeah.
Do you have a wins prediction for the Arizona Cardinals this year?
I do think they get better. I think they are a 7-9 football team.
That's interesting. Why better?
They have DeAndre Hopkins. They have a quarterback going into a second year that I think is going
that
to improve.
You usually slump your second year.
Sometimes.
Another offseason for the league to look at Kingsbury's BS and have that figured out.
They're going to win two games against the Rams.
Are they?
They're playing a fourth place schedule.
Yeah, I'm just going to look at their schedule real quick and kind of go through it just to see.
Yeah, let's look at it in quarters. First four games at Niners, week one. Then the Washington football team, that was just announced.
Yeah, that's actually awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, the football team.
Yeah.
Detroit Lions at home. So they have them at home and then on the road against the Panthers. So that feels to me like
one win.
I think the coin flip is between the Lions and Panthers. They'll beat Washington and lose to the Niners.
Yeah, I think they lose to both the Lions and the Panthers.
Okay.
Just because they're on the road. In Carolina.
At the Jets, at the Cowboys, Seattle at home, Dolphins at home after their bye week.
They could get two wins there.
Sure. Jets and Dolphins probably.
I mean, and it could be that random because they always beat us once randomly just because I don't know why.
Yeah.
The football gods hate us for like no reason. Like even when they're bad, they do, you know?
They'll get one.
Yeah. I could see him beating like the Jets and then us.
The third quarter of the season is Bills at home, on the road in Seattle.
Nope.
On the road in New England.
Nope.
Then against the Rams.
Maybe.
Yeah, one and three. I'm at five wins.
I'm at four.
And then they close out.
On the road at the Giants.
Eagles at home, Niners at home, at the Rams.
I think they're five or six wins, man.
Yeah. I got to seven. I'll take them over the Giants and the Rams, even though they're on the road.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's against a pretty easy schedule. I don't know. We'll see.
Basically, they're hot garbage, right? We can all agree that the Cardinals are garbage.
It feels like it should be between the Cardinals and the Rams for fourth place.
Yes. It could be a three-way race for fourth place in the NFC West.
With the Super Bowl slump for the division winners last year?
There's a lot to be concerned about if you're a Niners fan.
I know. I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah.
Wow, there's all these departures that we didn't talk about with the Cardinals.
Okay.
Rodney Gunter. Rodney Gunter left.
Well, they're screwed then. We all know he's a great kicker.
Farrell Cooper went to the Panthers.
I think that's actually a fairly big loss for them. He's a hell of a return specialist and a decent receiver.
Cassius Marsh went to the Jags.
Yeah, there's a lot of math.
Brooks Reed's still out there, I think, unsigned. I feel like he's had more good games against the Seahawks than Chandler Jones.
Yeah, I would concur, actually.
That's weird. The backup linebacker that you feel more concerned about.
It's just true facts. I don't know how it happens that way, but it does.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of fun doing these little know your rivals. I really do enjoy just taking a big steamy turd on top of every one of these stupid division rivals. I hate them so much, Brandon. I hate them so much.
It's a healthy sports hate for our division rivals. And there's something about each one of them that can really just grate on you, whether it's Cliff Kingsbury sitting in his mansion during the draft with his shoes and no socks on.
Like a Bond villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
George Kittle on the Niners. Woo! Who's the woo guy that's easy to hate.
Everything Rams. Everything. The city they play in. Their crappy new unis. Their quarterback that looks like an unfolding lawn chair when he's throwing the ball. Their overrated frat boy of a coach.
The thing about the Cardinals, though, is that there's not a guy on their team where I distinctly have a heavy dislike for.
I think the one thing that I legitimately hate is that cursed stadium down in the desert built on an Indian burial ground.
That's the worst part about Arizona.
I would hate Kyler Murray, but he doesn't say a damn word.
No.
And you kind of have to like him since he played at Oklahoma, right?
I kind of have to.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of loyalty there.
My real question is, how many more of my most hated teams can Kenyon Drake play for? First, it was the Dirty Dolphins.
Uh-huh.
Now it's the stupid Redbirds.
Who else would he have to go to? The Cowboys?
Oh, hell, he could go.
The Raiders?
Yeah, he could go to the Cowboys. He could go to the Ravens. He could go go to Pittsburgh. Ugh.
You know who I dislike the most on the Cardinals? J.R. Sweezy for being a turncoat.
It's
going to Arizona.
Fault.
Screw that guy.
It's not his fault.
I don't know. I'm trying to come up with somebody.
Yeah, you got to generate sports hate where you can, man. That's okay. You got to feel like MJ here, right? And just like, you can even make up, like Jordan did, just make up slights. Like, you know, the owners of the Cardinals, like, send mean emails to Jody Allen.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So catfish! Those guys. I think maybe that's what we need the listeners to do, is come up with made up reasons to hate the Cardinals even more.
Because we can't find any good legit ones.
Yeah, I think this is a fun game.
I like Murray. I like Hopkins. I like Fitzgerald too much. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's one of the places you start for made up reasons to hate the Cardinals, is that everything about Fitzgerald is absolutely a show to hide the fact that he drowns kittens in his bathtub every night.
A jerk.
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald once made fun of some 12-year-old girls for choices they made in fashion.
You know that happened, or maybe didn't, or actually didn't, but I feel like it should have.
He would be a judgy fashion guy, though.
You think so?
I've heard that he's kind of a watch guy, like he likes really fancy watches.
See, Patrick Peterson would be my guess for that guy. Judgy fashion guy.
Maybe.
I don't have any. Again, these are all made up reasons to hate somebody. I don't know a thing about Patrick Peterson's fashion sense, but it seems like he's kind of a diva about it. He's basically Cam Newton playing corner.
In the All or Nothing series, Patrick Peterson was one of the guys who like jumped out at me as another guy who seemed like kind of a cool dude.
Like a decent guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for when he's not.
So, yeah, send in your made up reasons to dislike the Cardinals. We need some. GoHawks@SeahawkersPodcast.com.
I think this could be good. This could be fun.
But try and keep, they have to be tasteful.
Readable.
Like drowning kittens in the bathtub. I feel like that's borderline to me.
That was right up to the line.
I don't like going there.
Yeah. So but that's what he does.
That is the line.
That's it. But he does that. So.
I just got some new kittens, so that takes me to and one of them actually fell in the bathtub here recently.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry that hit so close to home.
I know. It's kind of taking me flashbacks as Yeah. We were hearing splashing in the tub, and my oldest daughter ran toward the tub. And
was there nobody in the tub full of water?
My youngest just got out of the tub, asked her to drain the water from the tub. She didn't do it. Left the door open, and the cat got curious.
All right. So do you think the youngest will now always remember to drain the bathtub?
I think she learned her lesson.
Okay, good.
Kyler Murray, though, is a guy who did not learn that lesson.
He did not. He did not.
So, see, it didn't have to be malicious, but it happened.
Oh, no, it was malicious. He adopted 17 kittens from the Humane Society and took them home for animal sacrifice.
No, you're going back over the line.
And he did it in Cliff Kingsbury's Bond villain lair.
Somehow there's profit to be made. And that's how Cliff Kingsbury makes his money.
Oh,
it's not coaching the Cardinals.
No, not only that, not only profit, but worldwide domination as well. Or at least fixings on it.
We need to get PETA on our side against Cliff Kingsbury.
Shouldn't be hard.
Let's take a break and come back. And we'll talk about a few more Seahawks news items and get into some Do Better and Better at Life.
All right, man.
Getting back to it. Hey, did you catch my interview here recently with Michael Gervais on Field Goals?
I did not. I saw that it had posted, but...
Figures.
I only have so much downloading data out at the cabin.
Uh-huh.
And you didn't make the cut.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
Have these good interviews. I talked to Gervais. I talked to Brock Heward.
I just like that you bring on the big guests for, you know, your other show.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really neat.
No, we're done doing guests now.
Okay.
No, we're not. We're going to do one more.
What? For like episode 300?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm going to tease a guest.
This is why you're a professional. Like, you really are amazing.
I don't want to jinx podcasting it. Is the
jinx
thing.
What?
The guest.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You've already forgotten. Okay. The only other Seahawks item before we get to Dunbar, Greg Olsen signed with Fox Sports.
Oh, I thought that was already a thing.
Yeah. He signed just in the last couple of weeks as an analyst after he is done playing.
Yeah. I thought that deal had already been done. I guess I just had heard the rumors. I don't know.
Yeah. There was talk about it.
And good for him.
Yeah, he's making money even in an off season when there's not a whole lot to do.
He's double dipping, man.
I know. It's smart.
Yeah, hell yeah, it is.
Quentin Dunbar.
Not smart.
Or you may argue that...
crazy like a fox?
I think we've covered this, Adam. Dunbar, he may be... I'm looking at all these signs... And he may actually be the one who gets off the easiest out of all of the people involved in this.
Yeah, but he's not getting off.
I was looking at the story. Pat Leonard came out just these last couple of weeks covering a story for the New York Daily News. He got access to a search warrant. And I was in the same boat as you, Adam. When I saw this, I was like, oh, this does not look good for Dunbar. But he got access to a search warrant that cites evidence that was collected throughout all this police process. And initially, I thought it was a bad look for Dunbar, but I really do legitimately think this is a lot worse for DeAndre Baker of the Giants, because I think it's the Giants player.
So what is this evidence that they collected? Okay. Let's clear that up.
Yeah. So the quote from the story, it says video footage and direct messages that allegedly show witness Dominic Johnson. And Dominic Johnson is the guy who, from what I've read, is the guy who actually links Dunbar and DeAndre Baker. He's their common acquaintance.
Yeah.
So it allegedly shows witness Dominic Johnson overseeing a payoff of Baker's and Dunbar's four alleged victims on May 15th. And these were the guys who had the sworn statements that they said, oh, yeah, they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
So here they are at the office of Dunbar's attorney, Michael Grieco, apparently taking payoffs.
Yeah. So where is this looking good for Dunbar?
Nowhere in there did I see Dunbar's name attached to it, associated with anybody. There were some texts that came out. They found some of Johnson's Instagram direct messages where he said,
"Those were all to Baker." Yeah.
They were all to Baker.
Yeah.
So these weren't between.
It's the Giants' fault.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Essentially the direct message is saying he got them to change their story.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another message that where Johnson is telling Baker to come to Grieco's office. and he's saying, hey, I'm getting cash now. How much should I bring? I'll try and be there ASAP. And I'm summarizing the text.
So I still don't understand how this looks good for Dunbar, only because, number one, you got to assume that his attorney went rogue and just started paying people off without Dunbar knowing it. Unlikely. B, it also shows that...
Why would Dunbar need to have anything to do with the payoffs if it's between the lawyer?
What does it matter? It doesn't matter if he had anything to do with it or not, because now it's obvious that the people's original statement where he said Dunbar actually held him up and robbed him is the true one, because they changed it for money.
But do you think in court they can even allow those now because they changed them for money?
I think that they can bring up the fact that they changed it for money.
Well, there's also the idea that there's maybe some extortion going on here.
Sure.
It's interesting because I went back and I was listening to some of the interview that Grieco had. He went on John Clayton's show and was talking about it.
Yeah. And hasn't he been canned?
Dunbar said that he doesn't have anything to do with him being his lawyer anymore. He got a new lawyer.
I did find it interesting that each of the people who got paid off all got varying amounts and they were wildly different.
Do you think it maybe had to do with what they took from them?
I think maybe.
Because that would be kind of a crappy deal if, you know, one dude's getting 30, another guy's getting 20, and then a couple of guys have to split 5.
It was something like that.
It literally
was something like that.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if they just knew that other dudes would roll over for less money.
No, I think
so. They just kind of negotiated it down.
I think it had to do with making them right in terms of if they took this, now you're whole again.
Okay.
I mean, that would make sense to me. Otherwise, why are you going to change your statement for a share of $5,000 when other guys are getting, you know, 6 times that?
Well, why don't they just give them the stuff back? Why are they paying them off?
Weren't they playing for money, maybe?
Okay, well, then just give them their money back. Like, you could have done that the next day.
Yeah. Well, one guy had like some fake watch, so he probably rather have the money.
Yeah, right. Maybe he's the guy that had to split $5,000.
We don't know.
I don't know that I need Quentin Dunbar in my life that much.
Well, one thing that Clayton did say here in the last couple of weeks that made me think that Dunbar could at the very least play on the team. Now, he could get some kind of NFL suspension to where he has to sit out a few games. But the courts down in that county are so backed up that unless you committed murder, you go to the back of the line behind the severe cases. And so this may not even go to court until 2021 or 2022.
Yeah. A work acquaintance that I kind of vaguely know had a run in with the law that was definitely short of murder, but or anything like that.
Yeah.
But definitely not the greatest move, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they basically told him, like, hey, you know, this is how it would usually go for you. It would usually be like this, but just pay us a little money and, sign this and send it into us and we'll just call it good.
Why can't we do that all the time?
I don't know. When we talk about, you know, justice reform, I mean, I think this is maybe a way we could go about that, right?
Did you learn your lesson?
Yeah.
Pay us some money.
Right.
Go home.
We're going to concentrate on, like, you know, the really bad guys.
The really bad dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just focus there. And Dunbar can play for the Seahawks. See, the other thing that I don't quite understand about Dunbar is the how much loyalty there is to a dude who hasn't even played a snap with the Seahawks yet.
Oh, man. Boy, you're asking a lot, aren't you? If you're Dunbar. I mean, this is a big pull.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know how far they go on a limb for him. I don't know how much they're going to want to associate with him. Like, do you let him come and practice?
He got cleared to come back and practice.
Oh, man.
It sounds like they asked the team. The judge said, hey, do you want the guy or not want the guy? He said, we want the guy. So he can come and practice.
Okay. All right. Thanks, judge. I'm ready for that soap opera to be over, man.
I want more details into the soap opera. This is fascinating. But
we're not going to have any preseason to talk about. We may need more details out of this.
We could make up details.
Now you're talking.
Over the next few weeks, we'll put together a fictional podcast surrounding an alleged payoff of victims of a robbery that takes place in Florida.
Just picking a state, right?
Right.
Right.
And it's a 1 in 50 chance that I was going to land on Florida.
And an NFL team that is clearly behind all of the wrongdoing in this case, which is the New York Football Giants and their ownership. So
let's change it to the Jets just for the sake of.
To protect the identity of the people who this is based off of.
Right.
So, yeah. Woody Johnson, let's say.
Right.
Owner of the Jets. I think he's still owner of the Jets.
I think so. Yeah. He's got his hands in all kinds of different pots, it sounds like.
Yeah. And apparently he's stealing or having his players steal at card games.
Yeah. Well, you got to make that money somehow.
Got to keep getting them checks.
All right, Adam, what do you say we welcome some new members of the flock?
That's cool. Are we going to make false accusations against every one of them too?
Sure.
Okay, great.
But positive ones.
Okay.
Dustin Mock allegedly saved an entire family of orphan children from a burning building.
With one arm tied behind his back.
Yeah. And without any shoes. And he walked across glass like in Die Hard.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when he was done with it, he said, yippee-ki-yay, mother...
Catfish!
And with his award winnings from that deed...
Yes.
He chipped us off $100 a month through PayPal.
Dude, that's freaking amazing. Associate producer Dustin Mock. I would expect nothing less from the man, the myth, the legend, the hero, Dustin Mock.
Well done, Dustin. Those kids will be in your debt forever.
Absolutely.
And so will we. Dustin Mock recently said that Jared Goff, we talked about this on one of the last shows, about Jared Goff being the fifth best quarterback in the division.
Yeah.
We had a hard time coming up with who would be ahead of him, right?
Right.
We missed the obvious answer.
Oh.
He says, I can't believe you guys forgot about one quarterback who is way better than Jared Goff. Let's go through the list, Adam.
Okay.
Number five.
Is it Brett Hundley?
Number five, Jared Goff.
Yes.
Number four, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Number two, Seahawks backup quarterback, injured Russell Wilson.
Very good. Very good. I can't believe I forgot about our backup quarterback.
Number one, Russell Wilson.
Dustin, 100% right, 0% wrong.
That's the top five NFC West quarterbacks. Although
you may put Nick Mullins ahead of Goff. You might.
Yeah, and...
I saw you guys discuss this on the Field Goals podcast. I actually meant to listen to that one.
It wasn't actually on the Field Goals podcast. It was a pre-show, bonus show that we did as I put up as a bonus show on our Seahawkers podcast feed. So everybody who is in the flock, everybody who downloads the Seahawkers podcast app, they got that bonus show. And Nathan Santo and I, we broke down those five quarterbacks as part of that bonus show. And he put Beathard ahead of Mullins.
What?
Yeah. He says Why? The third round draft pedigree puts him ahead of Mullins.
Oh, not like actually being able to play or not play?
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because Mullins can actually play a little bit. He's like a miniature Brett Favre.
Third round pick Beathard, though.
I did see a hilarious article in the 49ers feed lamenting the fact that without the preseason games, how would they ever showcase CJ Beathard so that they could trade him for a draft pick? Who the hell is trading a draft pick for CJ Beathard? You're not getting a draft pick for CJ Beathard.
Oh man, I screwed that up. That wasn't Dustin Mock who sent in the rankings.
Oh, well, whose brilliance was that?
It was Ethan in High Point.
Oh, Ethan. Now see, have you ever heard of the Pacific plastic patch that's out there in the Pacific Ocean in the gyre?
No,
it's just it's a giant floating patch of
garbage
of plastic of garbage. Yeah, Ethan is out there right now in his kayak collecting it faster than it's ever been collected before, single-handedly saving whales, dolphins, turtles, sea turtles. Everybody loves sea turtles. Mm-hmm. That's Ethan.
Ethan
Eco-hero.
Was yeah. the recent winner of the United States Best Dad in the Country Award.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they only give that out like every other day, right?
Somebody sent me some of his kids' work from Grammar Day.
Oh.
and his son. It was correct the sentences. Okay. And number two on this list says, "We cheered for the Denver Broncos." Correcting the sentence. It was a lowercase W. So he uppercases the W.
Yeah.
And he says, "We cheered for the Seattle Seahawks."
There you go. Yeah. You had to cross out the two words there.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also appropriately did uppercase on Seattle and Seahawks.
His child is a genius.
Also, number five, write three words that rhyme with here.
Okay.
We're.
Yeah.
Deer.
Yeah.
And I think you can guess the third one.
Beer.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Kid's got his head in the right places, man. That's all I'm saying.
So, Ethan in High Point, collecting garbage, raising his kid right.
Yeah.
Correctly ranking the five quarterbacks. Sorry to screw that up for Dustin.
Dustin still got some shine. Wait, these are all fake accusations, remember? So we can false attribute things too.
Chad Holly came in with $5 a month via getintheflock.com. Chad says, "I have a long commute here in Florida, and I look forward to your show to help with some of the dead time in the car. After giving you guys a try now for a better part of the year, I felt I should start pulling my weight. Having relocated to Florida, I don't have a lot of opportunity to chat with other Hawks fans, so at least being able to listen to the comments and rants make me feel like being home in Washington State. Go Hawks!"
Nah, go Hawks, man. Like, I love that Chad got ahead of being, in the freeloader category. The accepted time limit of being a freeloader. He just beat that like it was no big deal.
Yeah, he waited around a year.
Yeah.
Even though he had to two.
He had to two, but it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know what else that Chad did is he's actually in charge of the reintroduction of the Sam Squanch in Florida. He's been taking them from his home state of Washington, little baby Sam Squanches.
Sam Squanch?
Yeah, have you never seen Trailer Park Boys?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. It's like a Sasquatch, but only for Canadian people that live in a trailer park.
Oh, Sam Squanch.
Yeah, like a Sasquatch, and he's transplanting them down in Florida, and it's going very well. It's going very well.
Huh. How about that? Yeah. I do kind of want to see it because the dude that with the thick, is it thick glasses or?
Yeah, Bubbles.
Bubbles.
Yeah, he
was the bass player for a band called Sandbox.
Yes.
And he opened up for one of the first concerts that I went to up in Calgary.
Right.
They opened for the Bare Naked Ladies.
There you go. The word kind of comes from that. He's a funny character, but there's a whole episode where Bubbles, who lives in a shed, thinks that a Sasquatch is like attacking his shed. And so he goes and talks to one of the other guys. "Sam Squanch trying to get my shed, Ricky." And so every time I think of the Sasquatch, it's a Sam Squanch.
There you go. Well done, Chad. Way to introduce those down in Florida.
Yeah. Propagating the species, man.
Darren Sturgill back in this time at $12 a month says, "Hello there again. I decided to come back after getting over the sour feeling from the Green Bay loss this past year. I hope we have a season this year, but would like it to be safe for everyone. I'm disappointed, too. I was going to make a trip to Seattle and watch a game this year. Oh, well, things don't always work out. It's actually fun to watch the Washington, D.C. team have another pitiful season. Take care and go Hawks."
Go Hawks, Darren. Yeah, I hope there's a season, too. And you're right. Not all things go the way that you would like in life. But one thing that has gone right in life for Darren is he's actually the inventor of new radiation shielding that is going around the first capsule to send human beings to Mars next year.
Wow.
To protect them on the long journey. He's a physicist and a scholar. And it's just it's an amazing invention by Darren. And it's nice having him back in the Ring of Honor.
That's probably why he's in D.C., right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where they invent all that stuff.
Yeah, I probably wasn't supposed to reveal that on the podcast.
Does he work for DARPA?
Shh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all you had to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Giving me that look.
The bleep the hell up look. Yeah.
Well, if you want to become a member of the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com. And, you know, you're going to want to get in the flock in the next week or so, because I want to do something different for episode 300 coming up next. I'll do the normal name and location for our 12, 12 and above, like I normally do. We try and do that once a month. It's been a little bit on and off in the off season, but we're gonna put this into episode 300. And for everybody else who is a member of the flock, I'm gonna try and list everyone's name, first name only, not location. But I think I can go through everyone's name and do that for our episode 300 celebration.
Well, I'm excited. I'm trembling with suspense.
So go to getintheflock.com or seahawkerspodcast.com/support. If you use Venmo or Cash App at Hawkra, what I use on Cash App and Venmo.
I didn't know that. That makes a lot of sense, though.
I like it. Yeah. Hawkra.
Yeah. Yeah. You can buy your way to football enlightenment and cleanse your Hawkra.
Makes sense, right?
It's a lot like Scientology that way. You just pay to be better.
Shh.
I don't think we have a huge Scientologist demographic. I think it's going to be okay.
Probably not. All the Scientologists are going to come in. You know, I've been listening to your show for 7 years now.
Yeah.
And when you cracked on the idea of paying your way to higher levels.
Right.
That's when I was out.
No, I'm just surprised they let you listen to the podcast from the outside. That's interesting.
Well, one guy who is feeling a little bit left out from his football fandom, John Davison, writes in. Hi, fellas. The Bard here, checking in to let you know I have survived so far and am still alive and kicking. I hope you're both well, but assuming you're still podcasting means that you are. Barry is still alive, too, but needs a new name and is confused. There is not much to write about, and I have been trawling the channels for news, so it was with some surprise the other day when I read the season would go ahead. Now is the time to jump down my throat, Adam, as I'm going to be negative Nancy and say I can't see the season going ahead. I can't see how people keeping a whole team in isolation would work. I can't see it at all. This is way too optimistic when 60,000 cases a day are being reported. I know I am seeing this from a totally different country, but I welcome your thoughts. Keep safe. The Bard. P.S. I would love to be wrong. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Yes, I can understand John's perspective there. What I don't think that he's taking into account is just how greedy the billionaire owners of the NFL are. And trust me, they in their mind have a price tag per death that could result in having the season go on.
That sounds like a very billionaire type approach.
It's a very capitalistic approach, and it's something we do very well here in America. Trust me, there's a price on everything.
I guess fortunately for the owners of the teams, the players are used to a certain level of risk.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I don't think the players themselves are all that freaked out. It's everything else,
right.
You know, all the training staff and concessions people.
There's a lot going into it.
There's a lot that goes into it, and they were not missing out on a season of revenue. They're just not doing it.
Yeah.
Those TV deals are too massive. And then they have the gall to ask the NFLPA to like basically take a 40% cut.
Yeah, 35, I think. They were going to put it in escrow, whatever that means. I don't know, but essentially taking a pay cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been making all this money and not sharing the revenue equitably with the players and owners. But now that we might lose money this season, we think we should do this more equitably to share the losses.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, now's the time. That's pretty funny. Yeah. Yo, one guy that's missing out on money here, and I do find it interesting, is Dan Snyder and the newly minted Washington football team.
Yeah, and that's what John comes in with saying. What the hell are we going to call Barry now?
Right. So I think it stuns me that they didn't come up with a name and zip out a logo and start throwing out merch. This is a whole year that Dan Snyder could have been profiting off of merch.
They're going to put out merch with Washington football team on it.
Nobody's buying that. Nobody's buying that.
I wouldn't buy it if I were a fan.
No. What's going to be on the helmet, by the way?
Their numbers.
Oh?
Player numbers they're going to put on in gold numbering.
Okay. It's going to be a weird look.
Yeah, I don't know how you can't whip up a logo and crank it out.
No.
I mean, how many logos immediately came out by people who had just whipped up logos of, oh, this would be a good name for the team?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, this isn't
the Washington Redhawks.
Yeah. LeBron had a funny tweet actually about this. He was like, man, must have been a really long board meeting to come up with that name. The Washington football team. Yeah. Like, come on, man.
Yeah. Well, they had to go back and forth whether or not they were going to be the football club or the football team.
They should have gone football club, you know, gone more soccer style. Yeah, if they're going to go that
the Washington route. FC.
Yes. Because the FT doesn't have the same ring.
No, it doesn't. I can't call them the FT.
I don't know why I can't, but it doesn't.
You can't.
Maybe won't is more the right. Can't or won't. I won't say the FT.
So bury the FT it is.
Bury the FT. We found it. There it is. The WFT. That'd be kind of more like the BFG, right?
Yeah, the BFT.
Yeah. The BFT.
I like it.
We got it.
Yeah.
See, how hard was it for us to workshop that? What, like 45 seconds, a minute? And this is the Washington team couldn't come up with something?
Yeah. And now Barry has a new nickname.
Yeah. He's the BFT.
I'm reading Matilda to my youngest right now. Speaking of Roald Dahl.
Solid book.
It's a good book.
Have you gone witches yet?
Haven't gone witches. I tried doing James and the Giant Peach with the oldest girls. They kind of got bored with it, but.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my youngest is a huge Matilda fan.
That was an awesome book.
We've done the movie. We've done the Matilda, the musical.
Okay.
And she just hadn't gotten to the book yet. So we're going through that.
Has she submitted for a name change yet?
To be named Matilda?
Yes.
No, I haven't done that yet.
Oh, well, not that big of a fan then. So whatever.
I need to teach her about fandom.
Yeah.
When you're all in. You get a tattoo or you change your name.
Well, there you go. You could just settle to have her get a tattoo.
Get a Matilda back tattoo.
Yeah. How old is she now?
6.
Yeah, it's about time.
Hawkmaster Crack comes in. And I have, it's K-R-A-C. And now with the hockey team being the Kraken, I'm assuming
we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Yeah.
Hawkmaster Crack comes in, says, Adam, I totally agree with you. Almost 100% of the time. But after the way this 2020 has been going, Antonio Brown would not be the worst thing to happen. Either way, I know you guys will weather the storm, especially the man under center. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. I do. Maybe that was hyperbole that Antonio Brown would be the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Not the worst.
No.
But it's right up there.
Well, I mean, it's in range, I guess, is how I should have put it.
All right. On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for CBS Sports. And this is honestly just a great example of the way the media as a whole functions. I don't care what topic it's on. I don't care, you know, what the reporter or who the reporter is, what news organization they work for. They all pull this
catfish
headline. Russell Wilson says he's been practicing with helmet face shield, thinks it would be, quote, crazy if they're required.
Okay.
Well, geez, I guess Russ really hates these face shields. And like, you know, that just, it'd be insane for them to do this. Like to require that, they're out of their minds, right?
You picture him saying somewhere that it would be absolutely crazy to require these things.
So this is the actual quote. Now get Russell Wilson in your ears right now, the way that he talks. Like, think about that for a second. You can hear him. You can hear him right now. This is the quote. That's going to be crazy if we have to do that. I've actually been practicing with it, though, every day, just so I can get used to it if we have to. But, you know, we're already out there already. So it's a little bit late for that, maybe.
Yeah, this was Russell Wilson he was talking to Joel McHale on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yes.
And it was talking about how crazy it would be if they had to.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what if birds grew tails?
That'd be crazy.
Or, you know, pigtails. Be crazy, man. It's not that he's saying like it was some sort of, you know, crazy decision by the NFL. And like, I don't know. This is, they frame it one way in the stupid headline. And yes, while they did get the quote technically right that he said it would be crazy. The intent is totally different than what your stupid headline said it was. So to CBS Sports and really the media in general, do better.
Fits right in with my do better this week, because doesn't CBS owns 247 Sports too, don't they?
Yes.
Yes. This article from Riley Gates.
I already don't like Riley Gates. What kind of name is that? I think it's a fake name.
We'll have Riley on the show sometime.
Sure. If you can find them.
Well, the headline, and maybe give Riley some credit because CBS may have a headline writer. The headline, Titans may or may not have spoken with Jadeveon Clowney. One of the two, the general manager says.
Yeah.
Maybe I did, maybe I didn't.
Hard telling, not knowing. Yeah.
Hey, Riley, can you write up a story about how the general manager maybe talked to Clowney and maybe didn't? That's not where it ends, though.
Oh, really?
No. So this article goes up. Not too long later, Kevin Patra of NFL.com. Kevin Patra's headline, Titans GM, quote, may or may not have spoken with Clowney recently. So Patra sees the 247 Sports article, but also saw this story and thought, you know what? This needs to be on the front page of NFL.com.
See, this is where Patra really screwed it up, because what he should have gone with is something along the lines of 247 Sports may have written an article that Titans GM may or may not have spoken with Jadeveon Clowney.
Yes. So that's another part of this article. 247 Sports attributes it to the television show that they were watching that the general manager was on at the time.
Okay.
NFL.com's Kevin Patra quotes that Robinson said it via 247 Sports.
Oh, wow. Maybe.
So it doesn't even go to the original source material. He quotes the 247 Sports article and essentially copies the headline.
Right. Well, let's see. I don't really want to write an article today. Headline. Other writer writes other article. Here it is.
But guess what?
Please tell me that another organization picked it up from Patra and ran yet another article.
Another organization picked it up. Pro Football Talks headline. John Robinson, Titans, may or may not have had recent talks with Jadeveon Clowney.
Wow. Is there not one editor in one newsroom that just like sees these things and just goes, guys?
Robinson said via 247sports.com that the team, quote, may or may not, unquote, have had recent talks with Clowney, and that they are constantly exploring ways to improve the team.
Oh my gosh.
In the 247 Sports article, it says that John Robinson was asked about it on NFL Live, the TV show.
So basically, I can start writing articles just based off of other people interviewing people on TV.
Right. And then the other articles, if you write it first, they have to say via Adam Emmert on the Seahawkerspodcast.com.
Yes, my crack reporting. Yes. So just watch TV, write what I saw on TV.
That's all you got to do now.
You know what? I take it back. John Davidson earlier saying he was doubtful this season is going to happen. I'm doubtful this species is going to survive past this year. We're freaking doomed, dude.
For 247 Sports, for Kevin Patra of NFL.com, for Pro Football Talk, for running the story too, all of them, do better.
God, do better.
And essentially running the same headline.
Yes.
Which is a no news story to begin with.
That's what I'm saying. It just gets worse and worse, dude. I don't know. There's always a new low.
I did like how Mookie Alexander from Field Goals, he covered it. His headline was non-news, passed off as news, continues to swirl around Jadeveon Clowney.
That's pretty good.
It's a good headline.
Here, speaking of headlines, here's the headline from ESPN. Report, Tom Brady, part of Bucks group workout despite recent positive corona tests. Tom Brady has the vid? Oh my gosh.
No.
First line. Despite seeing two players diagnosed with the coronavirus and an assistant coach test positive last week, Tampa Bay Buccaneers players are continuing to hold group workouts at a local high school. So two other players and an assistant coach tested positive.
Yeah.
In the group of players that Brady was practicing with. Technically, the headline is correct, but by reading it, do you think that Tom Brady has the vid?
You kind of get that assumption, don't you? And that he's practicing anyway?
Yes. God, it's just gross.
There's some ridiculous stuff, some not so ridiculous stuff. It's all mixed in together.
Yeah.
And we're crossing our fingers that season's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, generally, Adam, moving on to Better at Life, I like to have a theme that goes along with our NFC West rivals. I didn't do it with the Do Better just because the clowny thing was so over the top for me. But my Better at Life this week is for TheBigLead.com, who recently came out with the 25 worst team names in professional sports.
Ooh.
And two NFC West teams made that list.
Yeah, that's got to be the 49ers and the Rams. It's got to be the Rams. Everything Rams.
It's not the Rams.
It's the LA part of the Rams part, too.
No, that's
the
worst. No, you got the Niners, but the other one, Arizona Cardinals, and they are lumped in. They lumped in the Cardinals with the Toronto Blue Jays, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Baltimore Orioles, and Arizona.
Do they just hate, like, non-predatory birds?
Yes, the commentary is, oh, what a bunch of pretty birdies. They're all so harmless, you literally put food in your yard to attract them. You ever see any of these birds flying majestically over the ocean holding a shark in its feet? That's right. These weak-ass birds have feet because their toes aren't worthy of being called talons.
That's a little tough.
They're a little hard on the bird teams.
Yeah.
But yes, the other team is the San Francisco 49ers. And it says, what's scary about a bunch of guys who died like 100 years ago trying to find pretty rocks in the mountains?
It's the fact that they look like that they were missing teeth.
Some other football team names on here. Los Angeles Chargers. I didn't really get that one. Cleveland Browns, no. Miami Dolphins, Buffalo Bills, and Green Bay Packers.
I guess. Yeah.
Dolphins. You like the Dolphins one. Absolute beta move to allow a bunch of tuna fishermen to ensnare you in a net and a blowhole. That's a loser's design.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
They nailed it. So to Kyle Koster, Stephen Douglas at The Big Lead for coming up with this list and including the Cardinals and 49ers. You are
and the
better,
Dolphins.
And the Dolphins, Adam says, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
All right, man. I do enjoy they had the Dolphins on their number one. That to me, they got it. They were the worst one, right? Like in the rankings.
Well, they didn't rank them. They just it was the tier of 25 of the worst. They're all tiered together.
And so this is, again, like the PFF defensive line rankings. However you want to slot those at that point, that's up to you.
They're all bad.
Okay, so number one, Dolphins the worst. We know that. But look, I get that it's difficult to come up with a new franchise and a team name and logos and the such that, you know, is overwhelmingly accepted and kind of popular. And that kind of leads to my Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week, Brandon.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's for the newly minted Seattle Kraken.
Yeah.
Dude, number one, nailed the name. Like, there's not another Kraken team out there that I know of.
I don't think so.
And you can make a lot of Kraken jokes. It's a lot like saying fracking on Battlestar Galactica. Like, you could do it like that.
Adam,
that's fun.
Cracking the jokes, the joke cracker.
Yeah, see? Look, it goes on for days. Plus the logo is fantastic. Like, it really is simple, clean, has the little talon or the
tentacle.
Yeah. It's not a talon. Like, you know, we found out the difference there between bird feet and talons and tentacles now, going up through the S. I love it, man. I think it's awesome. This actually gets me excited for hockey season. I think I'll be getting into hockey now.
Oh, this is going to be your team now.
Yeah, I'm all in.
You just living close to Canada just couldn't do it for you before?
No. I had to care in some way, and the Kraken make me care. So for kind of nailing it and universally thought as nailing it, the Seattle Kraken, better at life than Skip Bayless.
The anchor with the space needle at the top.
I want a hat with that.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Also reminds me of the movie Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
Isn't that where they said release the Kraken?
Didn't pirates just say that out on the sea?
I don't know.
Your Kraken knowledge is lacking.
I just know that Medusa was nightmare fuel from Clash of the Titans.
Understood. I'm just excited to get in on the ground floor of a team. Be a fan from when they were incepted.
Yeah. So that way, when they ultimately win a title in 2 years, you can be like, I'm a fan from the beginning.
Lifelong.
Do you think there's any high school teams with the Kraken?
Negative.
No?
No.
How do you find a completely unique name in this day and age?
You look to the depths of the sea.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.